Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. I'm not sure who it is, though. Jesse. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. My name's Jess, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm here to deliver a message all about how you don't have to be studying the big book from front to back, and you don't have to memorize all the readings, and you don't have to have 9 sponsees and or 90 and 90 or any of that to be pretty all right at staying sober. Sometimes you can be those things and it helps a lot, but sometimes you can be just regular old plain trying, and that's good enough. So I'm also a little bit relieved. I was a little freaked out about the idea of speaking for the whole hour. But I got to tell you, like, for the second half of my day after I was asked to speak, I was like, my mind is scribbling, and oh my God, what am I going to say? And I don't want to say too many things or leave anything out. And your mind's going like this, and now I can just kind of like, relax, it's fine. You have time. Big breath. So it's actually kind of nice. I don't have to like ramble through any abbreviated version, which is kind of great. My first drink I had to get drunk, I was a child. We were sneaking beers out of my aunt's dining room at a family party, and me and all the cousins were taking them downstairs and drinking them real fast and passing them around because that's hilarious, right? And I was probably about 9 or 8 years old when I did that. The first time I set aside money and made real plans and said, I'm going to go out tonight and drink a bunch of alcohol and get drunk, I was 13 years old. And that's pretty horrifying now that I have 13-year-olds in my life. It's disgusting to think about those kids and the age I was doing that. And I never stopped after I got drunk for the first time properly, I say. I was 8th grade going into 9th grade of high school, and that just stayed right with me, man. I was not a real athlete as a kid, and my parents couldn't afford dance classes, and I didn't really play music well or sing or do anything else, but when it came to drinking, man, I fit right in. And it was like all of a sudden stuff clicked into place for me, and it was like I really had a place to belong. I was getting drunk with regularity, I would say, like before Christmas of 9th grade, like right away. And when I went into high school, I didn't make the track team and I didn't have any clubs I wanted to be a part of, and I excelled in getting drunk and screwing around and running around on the streets and blah, blah, blah. I did that straight through until I graduated high school. I found out I was pregnant 1 week after I got my high school diploma. Surprise. I had the baby and I lasted about 5 weeks, and then I was drinking again pretty much weekly. I was kind of a weekend warrior for a while. I moved out of my parents' house, real mature, got married. That was smart. Away from home, I was drinking more and more because I could do whatever I wanted. Right? Like, I'm not home anymore. I'm a grown up now. I got a kid and a husband. Can't tell me. So that went on for a while. And then I became a waitress and a bartender. And that's when, like, anyone who works in that industry, you know, it's a thing, right? Like, half of the shift is you after work. You leave the house and you're back 20 hours later because you worked for 6 or 8 and then you drank for however many until the sun came up. I did that for a nice long time, and we bought a house, and I was 50 miles from home and I didn't have a single friend. So I got a job as a bartender, and every single person and I knew in my life, I knew from the bar, and it was totally my identity. And it was every part of who I am. I didn't feel any real compulsion to give it up. And, you know, I went through some stuff and I got divorced and da-da-da. I ended up in a real sketchy financial situation. I didn't drink quite as much, but I made room in the budget when I was facing foreclosure and getting my car repoed and getting my wages garnished. I still managed to squeak out money in the budget. like a good alcoholic, right? Because that wasn't my problem. It was relationships that were my problem, and it was a lack of faith was my problem, maybe, or I got to find a different church or a different job, you know, a different guy, maybe, different girl, who knows, what year is it, whatever. And, you know, it was always some other thing I had to go find. There was an answer out there somewhere. I'm just going to keep looking. And I never quite got there, but there was a change in my life, a big change. I had a real dream came true, and I ended up in a really great living situation. My now husband, then boyfriend, we were ready to move in together, and we ended up with this beautiful house, and it was such a gift. The house I was in for 16 years was really falling apart around me. It was more than I could keep up with. It was 120 years old, and it has all the things that a 100-year-old house is, and I'm mildly handy, but not enough to keep up with that. My kids were in high school and graduating high school, and the house was getting pretty small for us. And when we moved in together in one new house, it was like a really great new start. I barely even brought furniture from that old house into my new house because I thought this is going to be a whole new thing. And within 8 months, I spent almost all the money from when I sold my house because I was out drinking like a fish. And now, because I don't have to worry about money quite as much, you have Uber. So, like, why care, right? You get to spend however much money you want at the bar. You got a whole bunch in the bank. And I started to really find myself miserable with my drinking, right? Life was so great and a celebration in every other way. And there was so much in those years that I had overcome and worked past and got through. And I still felt really spiritually sick. And at the end of my drinking, I would say I hated myself because I couldn't stop drinking, but I couldn't stop drinking because I really hated myself. That was the end of my drinking. And I would wake up every day and say, man, there's no reason to drink today. And my joke is always, it's not someone's birthday. You know, it's not a holiday. There's nothing going. It's a Tuesday in January. It's about 12 degrees. Why am I at the bar right now? What the hell? And I would end up there. You know, it was that deal where it's like, I'm not going to do this. And then you're here with the drink, like, there's always tomorrow, right? And I was going through that really, that was tough. I was really struggling with that because I didn't want to be drinking anymore. And physically, I was starting to really suffer. I'm a sturdy gal. But I was, as a drunk man, I looked like a tick who was about to pop. I was blown up, and my heart was racing here and there. I would get like these anxiety attacks, and I'll never forget the last Christmas of my drinking. It was just a bender, just a really gross bender, and I was at the grocery store about a day or two before New Year's, and I just felt like I was going to fall down or something, man. Like I felt like someone bumped me on the head. I was lightheaded. I was sweaty. I couldn't think. My heart was racing, and I knew that it was a hangover. I knew it was because of alcohol, and I couldn't even focus or care about anything I had with me. I just turned right there on the spot, and I took my cart and checked out. And I didn't go home. I went straight to the bar, and I walked in, and all the same people that are always there, because that's bar life, were sitting on the stool right where I knew they would be. And I walked up and said, man, is it New Year's yet? Because this holiday is going to kill me. You know, like I had to drink a beer and a shot probably for the first time in my life to get myself together. And I didn't like that one bit. But it didn't stop me from hanging around for another couple hours. So I had to get home before the stuff in the car went bad, right? That's the kind of stuff I would do. One time I forgot my phone at the bar on Saturday night, and I went back on Sunday afternoon to get my phone, and I got caught up in a conversation. And next thing you know, 3 hours went by, and I'm doing shots and hanging out and playing songs on the jukebox, and nothing that I needed to do that day was getting done. And then I get a text from my sister, where are you at? We've been here for a while. We're waiting on you. And it was my nephew's when they're born, not christening. It was my brother's child's christening, and this was their miracle baby. That they spent years praying for these babies, and now they're here, and it's the christening. And Aunt Jessie got drunk and forgot. That's the kind of stuff I would do. And, you know, it was just, it was every day letting my kids down. It was every day after work, hey, guys, sending messages. I'll be home in a little bit. I'll be home in a little bit. I'll be home after Jeopardy. Because that is my favorite half hour of the day is Jeopardy at 7. You know, and start the noodle water for me, or, you know, I'll bring, what do you guys want from the bar? They got cheesesteaks here. And you know, it was, my kids could never rely that I would be home at a time. That you could bet that I was going to a function or family function or a party or an anything, and I'm drinking and I'm driving my kids home drunk. My daughter got her permit, and that was like the best. And she had to holler at me and say, if you think I'm driving you around drunk, you're out of your mind. I'm not going to get my license if you think I'm going to be your DD. And I barked at her about it, right? Like, I had beef with her for her standing up and holding that boundary. Like, damn, Mom, come on, do better. And so, yeah, I did a lot of cruddy stuff, right? And life started to get a little better because my kids weren't little anymore, and she got her license, and she did not become my DD, lucky girl. But we got the new house, and things were going great, and I'm spending all my money up, and I'm drinking all my money up, and my now husband has no idea, like, how much money I was out there spending. I kind of checked myself on that. But it was just getting into kind of a rut that I wasn't enjoying anymore. So I don't know that my road in here is as crazy as some, but it's enough. So I kind of got sick and tired of my own stuff. And when I was a waitress and a bartender, I worked with a girl who was out there going crazy, and she got her life together, and we'd stayed friends on social media. And I had a buddy who used to book bands in my bar, and I saw him go out there and get his life together, and we were still friends on social media. And that friend, he went away, and he was upstate for a little while, and he came home and said, I'm changing my life. I'm doing things different. I'm going to work on my fitness, and I'm going to work on being sober. And I was like, wow, that's really brave. I think it's such a brave thing for people to do, and I always have admiration for it, and I never, ever thought I would be it, ever. He made this announcement and said, I'm home and I'm here and I'm different and I'm going to do my best to spend time with you. But if I can't, I can't. Sorry. And I sent him a message and said, hey, you know, I know this girl. So the other girl I knew who got her life together, she happened to be running this fitness program thing for sobriety. And I never went to it. I never had anything to do with it. And I saw a guy who said, hey, you know, like, I'm trying to be fit and be sober. And I sent drunk when I did it. On a Monday night, I'll never forget, I sent her a message and said, hey, I know a guy who might be perfect for this thing you're doing. And she said, yes, absolutely, share my information. And I sent him a message and I said, hey, I had a girl who's doing this great thing. I think it might be great for what you're looking for. You know, you guys might want to meet. And come to find out, it was my first act of service as a drunk. Happy accident, right? So you don't have to be good at this thing to be like half decent at it. Who knew? So I connected these people on inbox, and a couple days later, I see them take a sweaty selfie at the gym, and they're happy and they're smiling. And I said, I just commented on it and said, man, I'm so grateful that it worked out for you guys. Like, I'm so happy to see that it was a good thing. And they both immediately sent me an inbox, when are you coming? And I was like, ooh, this ain't about me. Let's keep the focus where it belongs, right? I'm just happy for you guys. I don't need to be in it. And that was in like January of 2019, right? Only just a few weeks after this heart racing supermarket incident. I'm being invited to where they are, but I am not ready. And I made every excuse under the sun to not go. And I would say, like, one day it flurried, and I was like, yeah, sorry, it's snowing, I can't make it. I told him I had something at work. I didn't have a job. at the time. I was like helping someone deliver flowers. And I was like, no, I have a work thing, man. Sorry, can't make it. And that rocked on for like a handful of weeks. And I thought, man, you know, it would be really great to see people, but I'm not willing to make any kind of admission, or it's just too uncomfortable, you know. But I would drink every day and hate it every time. You know, I wasn't having great drunks. And I'm thankful that, you know, we weren't violent or fighting or any of that, but I didn't want to find out, right? And I started to have these experiences. And from delivering flowers to dementia wards, I got really scared because I'm like, man, this must be what dementia feels like. I would have full conversations with my kids, my now husband, my friends at the bar, people, like even the woman I was delivering flowers for, sober, I would talk to her and she'd be like, you already told me that. You know, like even in my waking hours, I was losing time, losing memories, losing days and stuff. I would think it was Wednesday and it's Tuesday. I was a lunatic at that point. I was just rotting myself from the inside out, I feel. And it was feeling really gross and really terrible. And we would wake up, or I would touch the Netflix and it would be a season ahead. And you're like, what? You know, and like I wouldn't remember a minute of it, not a minute of it, just gone out of my head, you know, and that kind of stuff started to really mess with me. I didn't like that one bit. And man, it was like an odd feeling. So along with that, I'm feeling these things and I'm experiencing them. And it's about March of 2019, and end of February, my husband's family had suffered a tragedy. His nephew, who was 12 years old, passed away. It's terrible. No parent should have to go through that. It's a terrible occasion. There's nothing we can do about it but just to get drunk for weeks on end, right? We're doing our duty. We're honoring family, right? We have to get as drunk as we can get for weeks in a row. And that's what we did. The minute we got the phone call, it happened to be one night that we weren't drinking, which was odd. And he hung up the phone from talking to his brother, and he looked me in the face and said, what do we have in this house to drink? And I said, if we had it, we'd be drinking it. And it was, that was a tough time, right? And it's tough to be there for someone who's going through hard things, and it's just tough to know that there's people out there that hurt like that. And so the, like good alcoholics, we just got really, really drunk about it. And that's what we did for weeks and weeks. And the last weekend of my drinking, I did not know was going to be the last weekend of my drinking. My last night, I didn't know was going to be my last night. And it was the most, I guess, like profound instance I had of alcohol not doing what you want it to do. The last night I got drunk, I was doing everything in my power, man. I even set aside time for myself, and I let him have the day and sent him to bed. And I said, I'm just going to like send it, and I'm gonna have some elbow room here and just get drunk the way I feel like getting drunk right now and stuff. And man, I was giving it my all. I was like really giving it my all. And it was like trying to push a boulder uphill, man. The more I was putting in me, the less was happening. And it was this weird, I never experienced anything like it. And it's one of a number of times I think I could really feel God in my life now, looking back. I was doing my best. I was going to get drunk and there was nothing you were going to do about it. And I was going to get good and drunk. And I had all the ingredients and it just wasn't. There was no gasoline making that car go. And I don't know if it's a physical, like I hit my limit or whatever, but man, it was a terrible feeling. And I used to do like, you know, fun stuff like drunks do, especially when they're losing their mind. You write yourself notes. No, just me? All right, and you wake up and you read them and you're like, what the hell? that was something I used to like to do because I had all the best ideas. Right? You would have all your best ideas when you were lit up and you were just like full of energy and your mind was going. And I said, man, you know, they invited me to that fitness thing. I should go. I should do that, right? Because you had all your I should do that's on the bar stool, right? All your like, man, I should do that. And I used to watch people have adventures and do hiking and like farmers markets and things on Saturday mornings, watch the sun come up, you nut jobs. I only watched the sun come up if I was up all night, right? And so I used to see people do that stuff and be like, man, I want that. I want that stuff. You know, like I want friends that go on walks in the woods. I want friends who do crazy stuff or take trips or, you know, travel and see the world. And I couldn't find, I looked in every bar for them, right? I couldn't find the friends anywhere, man. I was looking, trust. I was out here searching. I couldn't find them anywhere. And so I used to want things, and I said, you know, I'm going to do that workout thing. I should get myself back in some kind of shape, you know. That'd be pretty cool. And I woke up the next day, and I was like, no, I'm not. I read that, and I was like, man, I can't. If I go into that gym, right, and you got people from, that Pottstown gym has people from sober houses, and they just got off the bus from rehab and all this, right, and they're trying to, like, help these guys out, give them an outlet, give them something to do. What am I going to do? Go in here and smell like Fireball, right? Doing jumping jacks around all these people who are doing real work, right? People who are doing the real thing, and I'm over here faking it, right? So I said, all right, this is what I'll do. Grand plan. I'm going to dry out, because having a reason not to drink is a hell of a lot easier than trying to find the right amount of drinking, right? I feel like I'm on to something. I'm like, man, I just invented something. I'm doing it, right? So I thought, I'll dry out for 2 days, and then I'll go, and I'll see my old friends, right, and I'll give everyone a high five, and that'll be fun, and maybe I'll join that gym, who knows, right? And it was the best thing. My husband, I woke up Monday, and I was like, you know, we should take a couple days off. I'm taking 2 days off. I'm not drinking until Wednesday, right? That was my big plan. I'm going to do this thing on Wednesday evening, and then I'll care after that. So I stayed sober for the 2 days because I had a reason to stay sober. Nuts, right? It's crazy. And because I couldn't string together 2 days to save my life for like a handful of years before I quit drinking, right? And so I have 2 days now, and I'm like a superwoman. I took off Monday and Tuesday. I took off Wednesday, went out, bought wine, so that when I got back Wednesday night, we could get right back down to business. And I went to this sober people workout on Wednesday afternoon, and I walk in the door, and this coach puts her head through, and she's like, are you here for the workout? And I was like, man, this is scary. I was like, yeah, I'm here. And she's like, are you sober? Whoa. Right? Whoa. I said, well, does 2 days count? And she lit up and said, get in here, let's go. And she brought me into the room, and my old friends were there, the folks that invited me, and they were very happy to see me. My heart was hammering so hard of anxiety at that point, I wish I could have returned the sentiment, right? But I don't remember anything that happened in that workout, but I did it. That was cool. And I said hi to everybody, and I was very ready to take my bag and go. Because that was not easy. And I'm walking out, and I'm really glad I saw everyone. And my buddy says, well, why don't you come into this meeting and say hi to everyone? And I said, because I don't want to be a liar. I don't want to go in there and lie to these people, right? And he said, well, just come in and say hello, introduce yourself. Maybe you'll know someone in here. And I was like, all right, fair. You just gave me a free workout. I'll play this little game. But man, I was doing all the things, right? A first meeting person could ever do. I was sitting in the back, and I was like not participating, and I didn't raise my hand, and I was watching the clock, and I was all the things that a first timer would be. It was me in that room. And he calls me out, and he's like, would you want to introduce yourself? And I was like, not even kinda. Man, like, but for you I will, right? And I said, you know, what's funny is on a bar stool, you couldn't have convinced me that I wasn't an alcoholic. I know I'm an alcoholic, and I called myself an alcoholic probably no less than 10,000 times in the bar, right? In this setting, now I'm around sober people, people who want to be sober, people who are excited to do the work, people who speak in a different vocabulary. I don't know. I remember my early sobriety. I used to think, man, these guys speak a whole different language. And it was a bunch of young kids, and I used to think, man, these kids are smart. The way they used to talk, and they were talking about their program. They were talking about the program they're working. I found out later they all read the same book, right? But man, I thought these kids were the smartest kids I ever met. And so I introduced myself, and I said, hi, my name's Jess, and I'm an alcoholic. And then I got very, very shy and quiet and emotional, and I said, and I don't know what to do about it. I don't know what to do about that. And then I cried, and I cry a little when I think about it, because it was a big deal. And for my money, I kind of worked my first step right there in that room. And I said, you know, I keep trying to fight this thing, but I'm losing every day. And it's making me a bad person and letting people down. I don't want to be that person. And they said, you're the most important person in the room, and it's all about you. And I was like, can I jump out this window, you know, right now? Like, that was the last thing you want to hear. But it's the most important thing. It's the thing you need to hear in that time, right? And it's the thing I want to give to every person who ever says that in front of me, right? So, yeah, it's extremely uncomfortable to think about, and I'm very glad I don't have to do that ever again, right? Like, I don't have to be a first-timer ever again. I don't have to do that. I get to make a choice about it now, which is more power than I had 5 years ago. After that meeting, the coach that invited me in the beginning walks up and says, I'm so happy that you came. Go ahead and stay sober. Come back on Monday. I was like, ma'am, it is Wednesday. I don't think you understand what you just asked me for. But I'll do my best. You know, because I was already planning dinner and drinks and Netflix and all the things in my head when I was sitting here. And I said, man, I don't know if you know what you asked me, but I'll try. And it was by the grace of God. It was God doing things I couldn't do myself. She said, great, try that. And then someone else said, buy a coloring book. Buy a paint by number, grab a modeling clay or a cross stitch or something. And if you keep your hands busy enough, the devil won't have any time to sneak in. And I was like, all right, that's good advice. And there I was in Michael's, like some kind of weirdo, in every, like buying all these kids' crafts. And I was like, hey, if I can waste money at the bar, I can waste money in Michael's. And I'm like a nut job. I'm in there. I'm buying like five different things. Because I'm like, it's only crazy if it doesn't work. And by the grace of God, I came back on Monday and met up with that sober group doing fitness, right? Because I don't know a thing about recovery. I just know I hate the thing that's going on in my life, right? This is how stupid I was. Coming into sobriety was I didn't know a thing. And I didn't know where, like, I don't know what I thought. I thought maybe help, just the ideas would rain down from the sky if you stayed sober enough, or you stop drinking and you glitter starts falling into your life, or I don't know what I thought, but I didn't know what I was doing. So there I am in Michael's, and I'm spending half a paycheck on arts and crafts, right? And I said, and it's coming up on Paddy's Day weekend. All right, fair. Good job, God. So then I'm there and I tell my husband I'm going to try this, and I lied to his face, God bless him, and I said, I'm doing a fitness challenge. That's what I called it. The first week of sobriety was a fitness challenge. Whole lie. But I stayed sober doing it, right? So you can be a liar and sober at the same time, haha, right? We're challenging all the stereotypes. So there I was, you know, Paddy's Day weekend, and he's down in the basement, and he's doing his thing, and he's playing his video games, having his drinks, right? And who am I to stop him? I don't care. I got my arts and my crafts, and who knew it at the time? I had God on my side, and staying sober, and I'm getting through it. And it wasn't the worst thing. I thought my life was going to evaporate up into like the nothingness because I wasn't at the bar on Paddy's Day weekend with my friends. I lied to all my friends, told them I was sick. I lied to my husband, told him I had a fitness challenge. And I stayed sober. And when I went back, man, I couldn't get to that fitness thing on Monday fast enough. I was like, I'm not one to wish my time away, but I cannot wait to get there. And everyone who knows me knows I'm never on time, but I was super on time for that thing because I wanted to walk in the door and show off. I did it. And I walked in with seven days of sobriety. I did it. I got through the week and the weekend, which is crazy to me. And I walked in and that coach looked at me and she said, "Oh my God, I am so glad that you're here." And I can tell you, you could have bowled me over with a feather. I cried. I hugged her. I hugged like 10 other people, right? Because, and I even told her in that moment, I said, "I have never had someone say that to me in a bar. I have never had someone say to me genuinely in my eyeballs to eyeballs, I am so happy that you came back. I've never had that happen." And so it just felt like the most amazing day of my life. And I got really hooked on that feeling of people being in your corner and cheering for you. That took getting used to. That was a pretty amazing feeling, and it was not one that I was experiencing in my life. The me that I was out there gave herself very little things to be proud of. And showing back up and getting a week of sobriety is like, that was unheard of. And for someone to be happy about it, and then a room full of people, so they lined us all up and they're getting ready to tell us this is what we're going to do today, and you know, it's jumping jacks and it's whatever, right? They have it on a chalkboard there, and everyone lines up and they're getting ready to talk about what the class is going to do and for fitness. And she said, "And by the way, Jesse has 7 days," and it's 30 people next to me went, "Whoa," right, like this, and they're cheering and clapping, and I was like, man, a girl could get used to that. And I was like, well, now I got to get two, right? And it just gave me a good push, right, which is the right support will have a big difference in your life. And so I went into that fitness thing, like, this is sober fitness. This is so great. And I get to, my husband will believe me, right, because I'm doing fitness and I'm being sober. This is great. And I'm, like, getting away with being sober, which is a very weird feeling. And I did that, and I did that for a couple months. And I'm on the phone with my therapist, and I'm telling her, "Yeah, this is amazing, and I got this great group, and I'm sober, and things just feel really awesome. And I don't know, man, like maybe like for once in my life, I got it." And she was like, "Whoa, you don't got it. You start feeling like you got it, you're in trouble." And I was like, "Hey, lady, come on, like." We had a good relationship and we could joke. And I was like, "This, aren't you supposed to tell me I'm doing great?" And she's like, "We love, you know, we love the fact that you're being sober. Like, that's totally a great, don't stop doing that." She's like, "But don't feel like you got it licked." She said, that's a number one way to fall right back in, right? And I was like, "I don't like this conversation." And she said, "Well, have you gone to any AA meetings?" And let me tell you, I was like, "What?" Like, I don't know if that's what I'm about, you know? Like, I'm loving being sober. And she's like, "Do you think you love being sober so much because you're an alcoholic?" And I was like, "Well, I tell them I'm an alcoholic because they're sober." This is a nut job conversation, right? And I'm like, this is why I have therapy in my life. And she's telling me, like, "You need to go to a meeting. I think you're ready for more." Right? She's good at a good push. We love her for that. And she said, "I think you're ready for more. I think what you're doing is great, but you might be ready for more." And I thought, well, there's more. And I could be doing it, right? Just played right into my ego. And I was like, well, fine, if you think I'm ready. And she said, she goes, "Okay, listen." She goes, "If you want me to go with you, I will. I want you to go and keep an open mind. Find one in your area. Let me know what you find. But definitely, definitely focus on the things that you have in common with each other, not the things that make you different." And if she did not say that sentence before we got off the phone, I would have never gone back. My first meeting was in Collegeville on a Friday night, in the basement of a church. And it, I'm not exaggerating, was 13 elderly men and me in a room. The end. Like, and I was in the back of the room, right? Real first timer, crying through these guys' regular speaker meeting. I was like, was there elderly on the invite? Like, did I pick the wrong one? I don't know. There was no one that, listen, and I'm not, I just, I had a hard time being like, I don't belong here. These guys don't relate to me. What are they going to say that I'm going to need? Right? Because me, and all this ego, and I got to really work on my relationship. You know, I had kind of a relationship with God. I didn't really struggle with that part of the step work, but I was like, I think it's a swing and a miss on this one, God, you know? Like, I don't know if I fit in here. I don't know if these guys have the thing I'm looking for. And God love them. They were so great to me, and they're so sweet. And I'm in the back crying, listening to a guy talk about being a pickle, because you can't unpickle pickles. And like, I'm like, is this my life now? And I drove past my happy hour bar to get here, you know? And like, what the hell am I doing? And what is all this? And is this where I need to be? Right? And after the meeting, this guy comes. On the way into the meeting, wait, sidebar. Way into the meeting, there's all these cars in the parking lot, and I'm walking in, and this woman says, you look like a first timer. And I said, yeah, you nailed it. She said, okay, there's two meetings in this building right now. One is a speaker meeting and one is steps meeting. And I was like, speaker meeting, please. I will take the speaker meeting. And I went to the speaker meeting, and turns out maybe the problem was me, right? Because I know now that had I gone to the step meeting, they would have read the first step, because that's what they do in that meeting for newcomers. I probably would have related, right? But I wouldn't have a fun story to say about me and the 13 elderly men, because the youngest one there was older than my dad. And these guys, and I'm sitting there, and I'm so concerned with how the message isn't hitting, and these guys, their story that he's telling about sleeping in his car and being homeless, I'm like, can't relate, didn't do that, right? I got really lucky in that I didn't drink myself into any real trouble, but it was the only thing left for me to do out there. The only thing left that I hadn't accomplished yet drunk was to get sick, hurt, or in trouble. And I was immediately upon becoming sober, and still am very thankful for that. But in this meeting, I'm not sure how it all is going to come together. And then one of the last guys that shares is talking about how he's from Northeast Philly, and I was like, hey, now you got my attention. And he's telling me about this bar on Roosevelt Boulevard that he goes to, and I was like, yeah, I know what you're talking about now. And he's saying that when he walks in that bar, he can guarantee who's going to be sitting in what seat and when they're going to be there. And he has proven that to be true even 20 years later, 30 years later. 35 years later, he'll go back, and there's always the same people in the same stools having the same conversations. And I was like, damn, there it is. That's the guy. That's the guy who had the thing I needed to come here to get, because I was so out of place and awkward and just crying in a meeting, which is weird, but okay. And that's where I was at the time. But I was very caught up in the fact that I was giving up happy hour to be here. And am I even doing the right thing? I'm not in trouble, right? Like, a judge didn't send me to AA. Do I have to be here? Is this where I belong? And then afterwards, they were talking to me and getting to know me and asking me questions about myself. And I was like, well, you know, I got to be honest. I'm not 100% sure, like, where I belong. I know that I'm having a hard time with my drinking. I'm wrestling with some things, but like, I don't know if this is where I belong. And this guy puts a hand on my shoulder and says, you're exactly where you need to be. And it was weird feeling came over me, because it was like putting ice on a burn. All the things I was feeling for like hours before that, all the like problems, I was very selfed up about, like, if I don't go to happy hour, will I still have friends, you know? Or I quit drinking and no one's calling me. I could be dead. Do they even care that I'm okay? People that I saw every day for years and years could care less that I'm not there with them. And that's heartbreaking, you know? I was mourning my old life in a bad way. And that guy tells a story about everyone will be right where you need them. Should you decide to go back to them, you can find them because they're almost like assigned seats at the bar, and it's true because they are. And they are tonight, right now. If I wanted to go by to my old bar, I bet you I could see some faces and some seats that I left them in 5 years ago. And but him saying you're exactly where you need to be, man, that just washed over me a comfort that was kind of the same as when I started drinking and I thought, man, I'm good at something, right? Like all the ways I didn't fit in as a kid everywhere and I couldn't really ever find my place. I started drinking and it was like, oh, found it, you know? And then when I came into sobriety and I went to my first AA meeting, I went to my first AA meeting 61 days sober because I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't know that you were allowed to just walk in off the street. And I didn't know that you could just go to a fellowship meeting without like a doctor or a judge or a cop sending you there. I thought you had to get like punished to it or like prescribed into like AA. I didn't know you could just walk in. And that's how stupid I was about recovery, which is why I say you can be like not the best at it and still be okay and still stay sober. Happy accident, right? And so I started to fall in love with meetings. I started to see the value of them. Probably a couple months went by before I got brave enough to go listen to that first step in the other meeting. And I thought, man, what a great reading. Like, what a great reading that is. If you're new in your sobriety, it's an awesome meeting. And that didn't really make me want to work them steps, man, but I enjoy meetings. And I went on like that for almost 2 years, just showing up at meetings and getting a little smarter every time. And I told myself, you know, I'm not like other alcoholics. I didn't get in trouble. And my judge didn't make me come here. I'm not in drug court, right? So I just kept going to meetings. And I would love that feeling of being around people who did the work and know how to speak well about it. And they just are so encouraging. And I used to like come and just vibe that right up like a sponge, you know? And I would build this big bubble up in a meeting and I would go out and the world would go right on it. And I'd go, now I got to go to another meeting, you know? And I would race to the next meeting and I would vibe all up on serenity and I would get myself all built up. And I had this old little pink bubble and I'd go out into the world and like one thing would happen or I'd trip over the dog or burn my toast and I had to go get another meeting, get new serenity, right? And it was like medicine. Come to find out, you can have that serenity with you everywhere you go. You can be that serenity for things, right? And the solutions and the steps. I wasn't too sure about that. I didn't know that was what I needed. I was going to observe sobriety and watch it happen for people and cheer them on. And I didn't know what exactly I needed for myself. But I'll tell you, I ended up in a stressful situation over Corona. You couldn't go into doctor's offices and dentist offices and the vet office, right? Because germs. So I took my dog to the vet and I thought she was going to die. And they thought she was going to die. And we weren't sure how it was going to go. And it was pretty dicey for about 25 minutes while I waited in my car for these test results. They were going to take an x-ray and do a test and they were going to let me know how it went. Well, I'm in my car and I'm thinking, all right, it's been a pretty decent run, but if my dog dies, I might not make it home before I stop at the state store. And then I remembered one of these really smart kids from the meetings at the fitness place who said to me, yeah, when you start thinking about ways to drink or situations you would drink in, that's probably the relapse before the relapse. These kids are so smart. Right? They are the smartest kids. And he only said that like Monday or Wednesday and it's Saturday morning, right? And I'm thinking like, okay, maybe that is, but so what? Right? And I really bounced it back and forth for a minute. People drink all the time. This dog is such a sweetheart and, you know, this can't be happening to me. You know, I can't outlive my dog. It's nutty, right? Like, this can't be happening right now. And so I didn't want to text my husband in that moment because I didn't want to be dramatic. But I texted the group chat I'm a part of because support comes in a gazillion different flavors for me. And I texted my group chat and I said, I'm at the vet with my dog and things are really iffy for a minute. I'm going to try not to drink about it if something happens. And a friend of mine texted back, what did your sponsor say? And I was like, that's a great question. I'll have one of those. And he came back to me that same day with a handful of numbers. Reach out to these women. I got some women you need to talk to. And let's get you going on some steps because I think you could use it. And I was like, dang it. Now I'm not drinking and I have homework. Yeah. Which is a good friend. That's the friend you want in your corner, right? Is the one that's going to give it to you hard. And so I took his advice and I didn't drink. And my dog lived. Come back out and it's a tummy ache and here's your $500 medicine. Good luck. Dog lovers can relate. So I take my expensive dog and medicine and we go home and she lives to bark another day. And I stayed sober for that weekend and I got through it. And Monday night, I got on what will now become my new home group in Zoom. And in that home group, it's a solutions-based home group that talks about how the step work will take you where you need to go. And it's a primary message in that group. And I texted my buddy like, dang, you really picked a good one for me. And, you know, they have a place in that meeting where you can talk about, you know, whether or not you need a sponsor and if you're willing to sponsor. And that prompt is there. And I took it when it was offered. And I got me a sponsor and I worked some steps. And it turns out I can have that serenity with me anywhere I go. The solution is in the steps. The steps did bring immense relief to me, right? I knew I was powerless. I knew I was unmanageable. It does a little something for you to talk about in what way, how, to who, how does that show up for people? What's that feel like? What's it feel like for the others when you're unmanageable? Who you hurt when you're unmanageable, you know? And really turning those questions over in your mind, facing them. Because I wasn't quite ready. I was almost 2 years sober, and I was not quite ready to have that conversation with myself. I still say today, if you poke me in my mom guilt, I will cry. Once I was faced with the notion of what an amends is, I could not wait to make an amends to my oldest. She shouldered the weight of my alcoholism more than anyone on the planet. I parentalized a child, which is unfair to her. And I gave her a lot of things that she didn't deserve. And things that she still suffers and works through today. So I will cry if you poke my mom guilt. I still have it, but I work on grace. And I work on now being able to sponsor other women and help them with their grace. And, you know, I've learned in this program, you're not the worst thing you've ever done. I've learned that I am not the worst day I've ever had. I've learned that when the hard days come, that's okay too. I could talk for an extra hour right now about all the ways God has had a hand in my life and how what I thought was a blessing was just the beginning and how like these things have turned around and looped back on themselves so many times. And, you know, God's not playing any games in my life. There's no coincidences, you know. So some young girl that I was a waitress with 15 years ago became the catalyst of all the friendships I have today. How one little touch can impact a gazillion things, right? That butterfly effect is a real thing. And, you know, there's people out there who are still out there who helped me do things I'm doing today. It's been a real ride and a real privilege. And man, if I want to talk about that subject, I can get emotional and I can go on and on and on, right? Because God's been so good to me. So good to me. Better than I deserve sometimes, I feel, right? But that solution was in the steps, and I was blessed with a great sponsor. And I'm blessed now to be a sponsor for other women. And it's a real joy. To see them change and grow and do that hard work, right? Because it makes them better women. And I tell them all the time, we are out here walking in dignity and grace. And that's something I used to think was for the other guy. I used to think success was for the other guy. I used to think that being healthy, like healthy, happy, well-rounded, that was for the other guy. That's not for me. You know, I didn't think that that was something I had on my lineup, right? And it is. It is it for me. It is to be had. I do get to walk in dignity and grace. I do get to be proud of myself. I do get to have a relationship with my adult daughter who loves me back, who seeks out time with me, which is, I cry when she messages me to spend time together. I'm like, I try to play it cool. Like, sounds good. Right? And it's such a gift. It's such a joy to have her back in my life. Because she could take me or leave me at one point, and I deserved it. And it's an amazing feeling. And there's a lot more. And, you know, can you remember back, way back in your Wayback Machine, when I thought I was going to be scared and unable to talk for this much time, and now I did it? But, I hope there was enough God in that message for all of us. And I hope that you can really take away, you know, I did it pretty imperfectly. I took the long way to my steps. I took the weird road into AA in the first place, you know. I held myself up a little bit. I'm not slam dunking this thing, but I'm staying sober and I'm pretty all right at it. And that's kind of a good message. I like to think for a Monday, and that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Thank you. The group would like to thank Jesse again for sharing her experience with us tonight. The group would also like to remind anyone in need of a sponsor to please see someone after the meeting. For anyone who has working knowledge of the 12 steps, please raise your hand. Thank you, everybody, for your service. And we'll close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer if you'd like to take us out, Jesse.
Sure.
Thank you.